Welcome to the ACO Show, a podcast about the American healthcare system and people who are trying to make it work better. I'm Sean Cavanaugh, joined with Josh Israel.
And Sean, we had a guest today on a topic that was right up your alley.
Yeah, Dr. Robinson is a participant in one of Aledade's state policy committees, which we help in some of our markets. We help the doctors get organized and advocate for their practices in state policy. And the first thing that struck me was Dr. Robinson didn't necessarily have a passion for state policy. He sort of got caught up in it because he saw a need to help his practice and practices like his.
So I know a little bit about prior auth from being a physician and experiencing the dread of having to fill these out and knowing that they both serve a role, but that the role they serve is to be aggravating and to be aggravating enough to make a doctor not want to fill it out. But you know more about this from a policy point of view. So what are your thoughts on prior authorization?
Yeah, well, as you know, Josh, I used to work in Medicare, and the truth is Medicare rarely does prior authorization. But as policymakers, we sometimes looked with some jealousy at our friends in the private plans who did have the tool of prior authorization to prevent some things that clearly shouldn't be happening in healthcare. But I think what we've all learned is doing no prior auth doesn't seem like the right path. But much of the prior auth that's in place seems to have plenty of examples of it, as you said, really being more of a hassle than an actual clinical guidance.
So one of the things for me that was an interesting learning from this is both the power of a citizen, a physician going and making his voice heard and making change, but also what ultimately happened. So didn't sound like it surprised you, though, any of it.
The part that did surprise me, Josh, is they got a law passed, I think, in the first or second year they were trying, which is not how things typically work. The part that didn't surprise me was the law they got passed didn't solve all their problems.
So it sounded like it was a good first step. And maybe some more changes could come down the road?
Yeah. As I said, Dr. Robinson is not someone who's set out in life to be a lobbyist, but it sounds like he has caught the policy bug somewhat, and he sees a pathway to helping practices and patients.
Well, we enjoyed his story, and we hope you do too.
We're joined today by Dr. Lonnie Robinson from Regional Family Medicine in Mountain Home, Arkansas. Welcome, Dr. Robinson.
Thanks for having me.
Before we dive into your excursion into state health policy, tell us something about your community and your practice.
Sure thing. Mountain Home is a lovely community in north central Arkansas. We are centered between two man-made lakes, and so there's a lot of outdoor activities here. We are also a retirement community, and so we have a very significant Medicare population. In fact, our hospital has one of the top five Medicare exposures in the U.S., and so there's a significant retirement community here. It's a great outdoor place, great place to live and work, and you know, a great place to practice medicine.
I'm glad to hear that. Let's talk about practicing medicine. We're going to be talking today in particular about some things that happen at the state policy level, focusing on prior authorization. So what is prior authorization?
Prior authorization is a process of utilization management that various payers and insurance companies use to control utilization and spend. They look at things like high-cost medicines and high-cost imaging and other cost drivers and put some guardrails in place to ensure that providers and others who are performing those are using them according to established guidelines and recommendations, so they're not overutilizing services.
When you say guardrails, what is the process?
So the process in my practice usually is around imaging more than anything else. We also have it with regard to medications. But an example is somebody with back pain. If the physician feels that person needs some sort of advanced imaging like MRI, there are a series of steps that are required prior to moving on with the imaging. Usually most insurances are going to require some kind of process like a trial of medication, a trial of physical therapy. And then we can move forward with prior authorization. It's a process where we call the insurance company or their proxy and explain to them what's going on with the patient, why we think they need an imaging study. And then they say yes or no. Hopefully we've done our due diligence ahead of time to ensure that the patient gets what they need quickly. And they say yes, but sometimes the answer is no, and we have to try something else. But that's it in a nutshell.
Dr. Robinson, the way you described it sounds pretty reasonable. The insurer is trying to make sure you're following the right clinical pathways and not overutilizing medicines, or in this case, imaging. So what's the problem?
Well, the unfortunate truth is that was a very simplified version of how it goes down. Usually that involves my nurse getting on the phone, calling someone, restating to them everything that's in the record, them processing that. It takes her away from patient care and other things that she needs to do for me. And I would estimate it takes a good, 30 minutes out of my nurse's day sometimes to do that. At the end of that, a lot of times I have to get on the phone and do a peer-to-peer conversation where the insurance company or their proxy has a physician get on the phone with me and I explain to them my rationale. My experience with that has been it is generally a very brief conversation, a restatement of the medical record that I've already sent to them, and they usually say yes at that point. It winds up being an exercise in futility. It's basically a drag on my time and my ability to take care of other patients.
The way that it's a drag on your time, do you think that's an unintended consequence of the process, or was that by design?
I think I always try to live by this mantra of always try to assume good intent on the other party. I don't know if it was by design or if it's just the way things turned out, but either way, I think insurance companies understand that if they put a speed bump in the road on some of these things, it's going to slow down utilization. The problem is it keeps patients from getting what they need in a reasonable manner, and it creates an undue administrative burden for providers, in my opinion. Most of the time, payers outsource their utilization management system to a third party. And so a lot of times, I don't even think the insurance companies understand the process that providers have to go through to get to what the patient needs. I think whether it's by design or an unfortunate, unintended consequence, it's problematic.
Dr. Robinson, so you identified this drag on your practice. It was taking a lot of your staff's time, a lot of your time. You thought not to necessarily to the benefit of your patients, it sounds like. So you sought to reach out to state policymakers. Can you tell us some of the thinking behind that? What was your inspiration and what did you all do?
Sure. Our practice has been connected to Aledaid for a couple of years now. One of the biggest surprises for me has been the degree to which they engage in policy and in making things better for primary care docs and working with them. You know, a lot of physicians like me don't really understand policy and how to get things done legislatively. We're busy working all day and taking care of patients. But I think the connections with Aledaid and our state policy committee really helped spur my involvement on. It's an encouragement to have people that are non-clinicians that understand policy to help lay the map on the table and show us where we need to go. At the state level with our family physician group and the state medical society, there was significant interest in moving forward after we heard about the Texas law that was passed a few years back, the gold card bill in Texas. And so we were optimistic that we could maybe achieve something like that in Arkansas, and the various groups involved began looking at putting something like that together. But I believe it was with the help of the state policy committee from Aledaid that we helped kind of formulate the actual language of the plan and get it rolling.
So you set out to try to change some of the regulations around prior authorization. The last statistic I saw is that 35 million prior authorizations were filed by medical practices in 2021. And as you described, about half hour of your staff's time to get that done. From the insurance company's point of view, what do you think their pushback is? And I say this as somebody who has both had to do these, and they're very aggravating. And I know physicians, and we probably all do know some physicians who are always prescribing the latest, most expensive thing that some pharmaceutical representative encouraged them to do, or physicians who are doing procedures that are a little bit questionable. What's your response to that? And how did you put that into action as you were working on getting this changed?
Well, I'm on the board at Arkansas Blue Cross Blue Shield, so I completely understand that side of the conversation. And I've had conversations with one of my colleagues at Arkansas Blue Cross, and their take on this is when we remove utilization management tools like prior authorization, spend goes up. And I think payers are dealing with a lot of challenges as well. You know, the cost of healthcare is going up. It's not going down. Their only recourse is to raise premiums, and I think they use this as a tool to help control costs. And at the end of the day, I think that's the world they operate in. I think the answer to the problem is not more utilization management. I think it's more in thinking about integrating the healthcare team into the process. And I think value-based contracting, value-based care is the answer for that. Because when a provider is held accountable for the total cost of care, when they are in contracts that the providers are at risk, they automatically adhere to cost containment and using good medicine applied in the right situations. And so I think the answer is not in more utilization management tools. I think the answer is in more value-based contracting. And I think when insurance companies and providers are on the same page in that regard, the cost will be managed better. There are always going to be players that, as you alluded to, they prescribe the most expensive medicine, or they have a financial incentive to do a expensive procedure that may not add a great deal of value. But I think when the payment is aligned with better outcomes and cost containment, that would be the most helpful solution rather than increasing our administrative burden.
So Dr. Robinson, tell us about this gold card approach. You said you learned something from Texas and tried to pitch it to the state of Arkansas. What is that approach?
Sure. The gold card basically is a means by which providers who demonstrate good behavior and good stewardship of ordering, whether it's imaging or prescriptions, get a pass, if you will. The gold card basically says you don't have to obtain a prior authorization because you have demonstrated that you're a good steward, and basically gives them a pass on having to perform prior authorization. As you said, Texas passed a law a few years back, the gold card bill. And when we first heard of it, we were very optimistic this would be a solution to reducing administrative burden. In thinking about a law in Arkansas that would be similar, we had made some contact with some of the folks from Texas to see what their experience after passing legislation looked like. And their feedback was it worked pretty well, except there were some exemptions in that legislation. Certain nationwide self-insured plans are exempted because, you know, a Texas law cannot be applied across the board on somebody that has employees and a self-funded plan across the U.S. And so it didn't apply to a lot of self-funded plans. And so that was a hint for us that it might not be the perfect solution, but it was certainly a step in the right direction, I think.
What was the process like of trying to get it changed? I assume you didn't just walk down to Capitol Hill and hand them a bill and that was that?
At the state level, the medical society kind of took the lead and they drafted the legislation very much like in the model that Texas used. We obviously engaged in lobbying efforts to help our legislators understand why we felt like this was a needed bill. But we had help from medical society and some of the outdated policy folks in helping to formulate that.
So you were personally meeting with legislators and talking about what it's like in your practice, just as you're explaining it to us today?
Yeah, I certainly contacted my legislators and talked to them. Fortunately, one of my personal contacts is the wife of a primary care physician, a senator here in Arkansas, and I think she didn't need much explanation. She knew why prior authorization was a drag, but certainly my local legislators I had contact with, and it was largely phone or email. We're about 3.5 hours in a no-good highway between here and Little Rock, and most legislative sessions I wind up being there at least one day, but this past session I was not physically present.
Did anybody argue against the bill?
Certainly, the expected opposition from private insurance, the various payers, weren't fans of the gold card legislation. It introduced some more administrative burden for them to try to regulate how this was supposed to go down. So they were in opposition to it.
And your approach was a little bit different than what you said at the outset. At the outset, you said if you're in a value-based contract, you're already aligned for using resources correctly. But it sounds like the gold card approach looked at historically, had you been successful consistently in getting approval, and should that exempt you from having to go through the process again? Am I describing that correctly?
I think you're describing the gold card process correctly. I think from the outset, my assertion is if we're in an at-risk compensation model, why do we need PA at all? Why don't we do away with it all? But I don't think any payer was ready to listen to my argument and go, oh yeah, you're right. Let's just do away with the utilization management, move on with value-based contracting. But since our efforts to get prior authorization changed at the insurance level was not successful and they weren't really listening to our concerns about administrative burden, I think the gold card was an effort that we had to pursue to try to fix that outside of them cooperating willingly.
It sounded like you had a few warning signs about carve-out and exemptions. How did it play out in Arkansas?
What we saw from Texas was notable, and we kept that in mind as we moved forward. But we were hopeful that still yet, moving forward with a piece of legislation in Arkansas would be able to reduce administrative burden. Even if the self-funded plans were carved out, we had some conversations with other policy gurus, and they felt like that particular problem with the carve-out, and I believe it's called the ERISA plans, would not be solvable at the state level, but it would only be something that could be dealt with at the federal level. And rather than waiting on hoping for something at the federal level, we felt like moving forward with something in Arkansas was going to be beneficial to at least provoke the conversation and get the ball moving in some direction to help reduce administrative burden in some way. So we did note the issue that Texas had with the gold card, but still felt like it was going to be something that would be helpful for providers in Arkansas.
Dr. Robinson, any sense of like what percentage of your patients fall under the gold card provision and what percent don't?
Yeah, so after we got through kind of the legislative process, again, we made note of, you know, the self-funded ERISA plans being potentially carved out. I don't think we understood, even as we were moving through the legislative process, the degree to which other plans were being carved out. But basically, all state-funded plans were excluded. That means state employees, public school teachers. Arkansas expanded Medicaid and uses state dollars to pay premiums for persons that might otherwise not have coverage to get private insurance. And so anybody that had that Arkansas Works population was carved out, and all of the self-funded and third-party administrated plans. And so that basically left small businesses, medium-sized businesses that had commercial insurance and group plans through the insurance companies that were kind of the remainder that were covered under that. And if you were asking me to just kind of guess at the percentage of that, I would say 10 to 15% of my patients actually fall under the gold card as the legislation is written currently. Like I said, very unfortunate.
The upside is you did have a successful effort in many ways. Like, this is your first foray into state health policy. You learned how to lobby your legislators. You learned how to build coalitions with other groups. A big lesson of policy is always sometimes you win, but it doesn't get you exactly what you were looking for, which seems to be the case here. So what's next for you and the state policy group in Arkansas?
Well, I will agree with you that even with some of that disappointment, if you will, about it not being broad coverage on the gold card, I think it's helped start the conversation about administrative burden. You don't have to read too many healthcare headlines to know that burnout is a big problem in our country. And I think that administrative burden is a huge contributor to burnout among providers. And I think we need to deal with that and do something about it. And I think it has brought the conversation to the forefront. Physicians have learned they're going to have to engage on these issues in order to bring about change. And hopefully it'll bring about more effort at different levels on prior authorization particularly. I think there's a lot more conversation going on at the federal level, Medicare Advantage and reforming prior authorization. I think the AMA is doing a lot of work on changing prior authorization. And so I'm optimistic that, you know, it's the beginning of bigger and better things in that regard. As far as the state policy committee goes, our next big project is looking at minimum primary care spend. And again, I think the policy committee has been a great resource for me as a new to the legislative process person. Having somebody that's got some of the, you know, roadmap and knows where to go next with the process. When we started talking about minimum primary care spend, I was hopeful that that would be a one session project. I was sorely mistaken. You know, in order to require a minimum spend, you have to measure what you're already spending. And so we've got an interim study proposal going through the legislature right now to begin using our state payer claim database to begin measuring how much we're spending on primary care so that we can then start moving in the direction of a minimum spend piece of legislation at a later date.
And just for our listeners, you mentioned minimum primary care spend. This is an effort that's underway in quite a few states at this point to try to increase the investment in primary care. Primary care is the one area where if you spend more money, you typically reduce total cost of care and improve the quality of care and sometimes reduce inequities in care. So a number of states are focusing on how they get greater investment in primary care. And Arkansas is one of those states working on that. So I've worked in government at all levels, federal, state, municipal, both the executive and legislative branch. And a big part of policymaking is dealing with lobbyists, people who are trained to try to influence policy. But I will say it is much more impactful when people like yourself, Dr. Robinson, who are experiencing the problem at hand, take the time out of your job to convey your personal experiences and suggest changes and engage in the process. So I realize it's probably a burden on you, but I think it's a great effort you're undertaking and your colleagues in Arkansas. And I'm sure your legislators and state regulators appreciate it too.
It's different than what I do every day. And so it is intriguing to engage in the process. And I honestly have enjoyed it. part of the challenge is just busy practice, and also the distance to our state capital is, you know, there's no easy way to get there from here. You guys have probably seen the meme. I would share this with my non-physician board members at Blue Cross when I talk about prior authorization. But the meme, it says what a prior authorization is like. And at the top, it says, "Doctor, you need this medicine." Patient takes it to the pharmacy and says to the pharmacist, "The doctor says I need this medicine." The pharmacist says to the insurance company, "The doctor says the patient needs this medicine." And the insurance company says, "Really? Let's ask the doctor." So that circular reasoning and loop that just spins and spins is very frustrating.
With Dr. Lonnie Robinson of Mountain Home, Arkansas at Regional Family Medicine, we appreciate you sharing your story.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me.
The ACO Show now has a mailbag. Submit your questions, compliments, or episode ideas to acoshow@allidade.com. This show was produced by Leanne Horst, Alana Coogan, Rebecca Raymond, and Stuart Taylor. Check out more of our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.